Chapter 13. In Neil's nightmares, he was locked in the trunk of a car. He was locked in the trunk of a car with his heart beating its way out of his chest. He was locked in the trunk of a car with the sound of his own voice begging, tear thick and barely recognizable. He was locked in the trunk of a car with blood all over his hands, clotted enough to make his fingers stick to his palms. He was 13 and locked in with the still warm corpse of his mother. When he woke up, he was almost always in the narrow enclosure of his bunk, with the ceiling close enough to make his chest cave in. Real life didn't help him, especially when his dreams were memories that he relived over and over again in his sleep. "Neil," Matt said, voice low and bleary. Usually he didn't bother, because normally Neil left the room before he got the chance. "Neil?" "Yeah," Neil rasped back in quiet acknowledgement. He heard rustling and looked over the edge of the bed to find Matt looking back at him, his face lit up in eerie blue by the glow of his phone. "You're all right," Matt said, a statement rather than a question. It was nice to hear, in a strange way. Even having survived the Belmont game without a hiccup, Neil wasn't all right, but it was a comfort hearing someone say it like he would be. "Yeah, go back to sleep," he replied, dropping down onto his mattress again. It was too dark and cold to run at this hour on a Monday morning, and they would have to get up for practice soon enough anyway. Despite his words, though, neither of them fell back asleep before Matt's alarm went off. Neil went to morning practice as usual in the back of Matt's truck, but went to Redden in the afternoon. Wymack said that he would send someone over to pick Neil up so he wasn't too late for afternoon practice, and so he walked over from his math class rather than go via the dorms. The autumn air was crisp, and the campus was bustling. The black streamers for Seth had already been mostly cleared away, but here and there were a few straggly remnants on the fences and walls. He had missed the semester meet and greet with Betsy that was required of the Foxes, already putting him on the back foot. He knew that Andrew had undoubtedly spoken about him at least once during his weekly sessions, and that Dan was another regular visitor during the season. It didn't matter that patient-doctor confidentiality meant that Betsy couldn't tell Neil what they had told her. He knew that she would have formed an opinion. Actually, not knowing what had been said about him just made it worse. Neil had barely sat down on a couch in the waiting room when a woman emerged from down the hall. She smiled when she saw him, the skin around her eyes crinkling in genuine pleasure. It was probably the most pleased anyone had ever looked to see Neil. "You must be Neil?" she asked. And at Neil's nod, said, "I'm Betsy Dobson. Please, come in." She led him down the hall and into her office, stepping out of the doorway so he had plenty of room to get through. "Take a seat. Tea? Cocoa?" "No, thank you," Neil answered, taking the chair. The office was warmly furnished, not quite what he had imagined. It took him a moment to realize that what was throwing him off was the perfect tidiness of the room. Betsy settled down behind her desk, looking at Neil through her glasses. "So, how are you, Neil?" She was unnerving the same way he found Renee, though he doubted that Betsy had a mysterious history of knife play and violence. It was more that as soft as she seemed, she was clearly deeply intelligent. Neil had never dealt with the two like that together before he came to PSU. Kevin was the closest, and despite Neil's personal feelings, even he could recognize that Kevin wasn't all that soft. This was the woman who outlasted Andrew Minyard and whatever he had thrown at the 12 psychiatrists before her. It didn't pay to forget that. "Fine," Neil said, and through effort it didn't sound as though it came through his teeth. "You look a bit like you've been through the wars," she said, touching her fingers to her own face, where Neil knew he had a distinctly green patch of bruising. "You must have been pleased with the win on Friday, though. You watched the games?" "Of course. I admit that I don't know much about XE, but I still enjoy the spectacle when I get a chance," she said, reaching into her desk drawer. She pulled out a little voice recorder that she put on the desk between the two of them. "Neil, have you had any counseling before?" Neil had to resist the urge to laugh. "No." "I record sessions so I can evaluate them or listen back to them later, but I want you to understand that only I have access to these recordings. Furthermore, everything we discuss within these walls is strictly between the two of us, she explained. The only exception is if I think that you're in danger, or a danger to other people. Then I might choose to involve people who could help you better than I could. If only she knew. Neil nodded, because he couldn't have any other possible response. She flicked the recorder on so it lit red. Unlike the meetings I do with your teammates each semester, this is a formal session. So I will be picking apart everything you say. But you shouldn't let that stop you from speaking your mind. This appointment is about you. So, Neil, please tell me a bit about yourself. You must already know, Neil prodded. Since his identity had gone public, information about him was everywhere, even without his teammates passing it on to Betsy themselves. The important secrets were secrets still, but Neil himself wasn't a mystery. I know what David told me when he made these appointments, and I know the opinions of some of the other Foxes, but I want to hear what you have to say. What did Coach say when he booked me in? That, and this is his opinion, not mine, you have some trauma in your past that's affecting you now that you want to work through. That was both more truthful than Neil had been expecting, and more of an understatement than Neil thought possible. He asked me to help you, and I will, if you let me, she went on gently. My name is Nathaniel Wisniewski, Neil said, ignoring the effect that his own name had on him. I was born in Baltimore, and my father gave me to Tetsuji Moriyama when I was 10 years old. Betsy's expression didn't flicker. Gave? Sold, Neil corrected. I know I said I'm not a follower of sports, but I do know who Tetsuji Moriyama is. So you were with his team for 8 years? 5, Neil said. Betsy gave him a prompting look, but he wouldn't go on, just looked at her. The words, "My mother took me and ran, and that killed her," hung on the back of his tongue like a poison. But that was too much truth. The thing about counseling is that it works a lot better when you're honest, she prompted, as if reading his mind. Honesty wasn't Neil's problem, though. There are lots of things I just can't talk about. Because? Because I'm from a family of criminals. It brings a whole new meaning to being a danger to others, Neil quipped. Betsy hummed thoughtfully. Then I appreciate what honesty you can afford me. So you spent 5 years with the Ravens. What was that like? Neil smiled crookedly. Damaging? Do you think so? That threw him a little. What do you mean? I mean, what makes you think it damaged you? Neil could only stare at her for a long moment. There were a lot of ways to answer that. I can't sleep without having nightmares, or I have panic attacks so bad I think I must be going insane, or I can't hear my own name without hearing it screamed. It was almost impossible to choose one. He stood, suddenly enough that Betsy finally blinked. He heard her chair move on the floor when he turned his back on her, but she stopped when she realized he wasn't leaving. Instead, he hitched down his shirt with one hand on the hem. It was too big for him, so the neck of it pulled easy enough to show both some of the scars from Rico's knife and the half-moon imprint of teeth where someone had drawn blood. Betsy didn't do anything so cliché as gasp. She didn't make a sound at all. After a moment, she said, "Neil." And Neil let go and turned back to her. "Because of that," he said. And it came out confrontational, even as his heart pounded in his throat and his skin crawled. Then he dropped back into his seat. "You received all of those at Ed Growlin?" Betsy asked, steepling her fingers in front of her on the desk. "Not all of them," Neil replied. Her lack of reaction was more soothing than pity ever would have been. "At some point we're going to have a discussion about how people marking your body in no way makes you damaged," she said. "For now, though, I want to hear about how you're settling in here. Do you feel safe with the Foxes?" "That's a complicated question." "Is it?" "The Foxes are a group. I feel as safe as I ever do with some of them. Some of them, not so much." "Any of them in particular?" She smiled as she said it. His face must have been an indicator that he knew this question was prompted by whatever the others in YMAC might have said. "No one I can't handle," Neil replied, unwilling to say anything specific. It had the added bonus of being true. Neil had already survived Andrew Minyard, even if he had come off second best. Okay, Betsy accepted. We're nearly out of time, but there was one last thing I wanted to find out. What are you hoping to achieve from these sessions? That was almost more difficult than trying to define his reasons for feeling damaged. He couldn't say to Betsy's face that he wanted to get through the sessions so he would be allowed to play. Or he could, if he wanted to be asked again every Monday for the rest of his college career. He might not have been to counseling before, but even he could figure out that part of it meant accepting that there was something to improve. Neil was damaged. Not just his skin, but also his mind. This wasn't going to be fixed by Betsy Dobson in her too neat office with her degree framed on the wall. This wasn't fixable at all. Neil wasn't willing to pretend. Down that road lay a tentative hope he couldn't afford. I want to be better, he found himself saying, raw as a wound. That was the truth that Betsy had asked for, ugly and brutal. Betsy looked like she wanted to unpack that, but their half hour was up. Neil, thank you. I'll see you next Monday, she said instead. Neil couldn't do anything but nod and leave, feeling like he'd been scrubbed out inside with a wire brush. He couldn't decide if he had revealed too much, but he couldn't change that now. When Neil finally got out the front door of Redden, Andrew's car was parked at the curb, and Neil's heart sank into his shoes. He couldn't think of anyone he wanted to spend less time with right now than Nikki. That was, up until he realized that the driver of the car wasn't Nikki, but Renee. Hi, Neil, she said, looking up from her phone where she was leaning against the hood. She was wearing her light uniform for their cardio training, and she smiled at Neil exactly like Betsy had, bright and welcoming, as though she was pleased to see him. Neil didn't say anything as he walked around the car to drop into the passenger seat. He would have preferred Nikki. Neil expected her to ask how things had gone with Betsy, but instead she was quiet as she pulled out of the parking lot. Eventually, Neil said, I didn't realize anyone else drove Andrew's car. He said that he knows there's less of a chance of me crashing it than Nikki, Renee replied, tapping her fingers absently on the steering wheel. Nikki picks up Andrew on Wednesdays, so it seemed more sensible that I pick you up. That way Nikki doesn't miss practice twice. Sure, Neil commented, looking out the window. The view was familiar after a few months at PSU, and once he focused, Neil realized that they weren't heading towards the stadium. They had turned the wrong way out of the parking lot and were headed towards the opposite side of campus. His heart froze in his chest momentarily, and then leapt to life at 10 times its original speed. Where are you taking me? Renee looked over at him and offered a smile. I wondered when you'd catch on. Nowhere, actually. I just wanted 10 more minutes with you. Coach is going to wonder where we are, Neil said, not sure himself if that was a statement of fact or a warning. I told him we would be a little late back, Renee replied. I didn't want him to worry. You've got 10 minutes, then, Neil said, not quite snapping. The idea that she actually mentioned this plan to Wymack was half a comfort, but he was still prickly about having been cornered. That it was Renee doing the cornering was worse. Neil's main association with Renee was her crushing him ruthlessly in Fox Tower's basement. Andrew said that you broke your deal with him already, she said. Yes. Surprisingly, her response was, I don't blame you. What? If I were in your position, I probably would have done the same, she said. He told me about your deal when he asked me to be involved in the first place. In your eyes, he didn't keep up his end of the bargain. If you were in my position, you would have won, he said, because Renee was better than both of them. She chuckled a little at that. But what's your point? My point is that when Andrew agreed to let Kevin stay, we divided the team in two. He would protect his group, if needed, and the others would be mine. So you're going to offer me a deal, Neil said, words dripping with skepticism. Actually, I wanted to ask you a favor. What? Neil asked, blinking a little. I'm sure you've noticed by now that we are a fractured team. We're split in two, and it costs us on the court. But you're in a unique position. You have a connection with Kevin, and you've caught Andrew's interest, too. I'm asking that you bring them into us. I don't have that kind of influence over any of them. And in case you hadn't noticed, Andrew wiped the floor with me the other night. He probably lost interest after that. That's not quite how it works, she replied. Andrew likes you. Everyone says it. Surely you have a better chance than I do. She shook her head. Oh, no. Andrew respects me and tolerates me, but our relationship has a very delicate balance. The others like to bet, but it isn't like that between us. They're convinced that the two of you are going to end up together, Neil said. There was a lot of money riding on it, according to Matt. Whether they had bet for or against the pairing, none of the Foxes actually wanted the two to end up together. That much was obvious from the group's shared looks every time Renee and Andrew spoke. Yes, they are. You'll just have to take my word for it. That won't happen, she said lightly. Neil took a stab in the dark. Because of Kevin? Renee shot him a look that was half surprised before turning back to the road. It's not like that. Kevin is straight. Apparently that doesn't preclude people wanting him, Neil said, quoting Andrew's comment from their night in Columbia. Obviously recognizing it, Renee laughed again. Andrew said you had assumed he allowed Kevin to stay because he wanted Kevin that way. You're wrong, but it makes me curious that you did think that, she said. Why? Neil mulled over his answer for a long moment. I can't think of anything else that Kevin has that Andrew might want. Can't you? She asked lightly. I think it's probably a little more complicated than that. Knowing Andrew, I don't think liking someone necessarily means that he would do what they wanted. Maybe if they asked the right way. Then how do you propose I do it? Kevin is going to reach out to you, probably sooner rather than later. You should let him. Do you think Andrew is going to let him? I think if Kevin can summon up the courage to ask him to give ground, he probably will. That was an interesting observation about both men. The idea that Andrew would back down if Kevin were brave enough to ask him to give Neil access to their circle, and the idea that Kevin might actually ask at all. Neil said, I don't think you're right. Privately, he didn't think it would matter. Kevin seemed content to let Andrew dictate who he spent time with. He hadn't reached out so far. Neil had no reason to think that would change now. Would you like to make a wager? Renee asked, because even though she was different from the others in so many ways, she was still a fox. I don't make bets, Neil replied, a refrain of what he had been saying for months. Unlike the others, Renee just smiled to hear it. They pulled into the parking lot of the court, Renee parking up next to Matt's hulk of a truck where it sat by the gates. Neil grabbed his bag and slid out, suddenly eager for the purity of running until he couldn't think straight. By the way, it's interesting that you implied Andrew won the other night, Renee said, catching his eye over the roof of the car. Because he implied that you did. Neil couldn't quite believe that. He gestured to his face. Does this look like winning to you? In my experience, winning often looks exactly like that, Renee replied. That being said, if you'd like, I'm happy to keep sparring with you. Andrew doesn't need to be involved at all. Neil stared at her blankly until she said, I understand why you might be hesitant to accept that offer. You don't need to decide now. I'm not going anywhere. No, I will. Please, Neil said, before he thought how stupid it was that he was asking her to beat the hell out of him and then saying please. But that wasn't what she was offering this time, he realized. She meant to offer to teach him how to protect himself properly, and that was what he was accepting. She smiled. Good. Now come on, before Coach really does start to worry. Chapter 14. By the time the autumn banquet rolled around, Neil was getting less hours of sleep a night than he had in the nest. Hours on the court at night, and then irregular sparring sessions with Renee, meant that sleep was limited even without the night terrors. He and Matt were both looking distinctly hollow-eyed. It was relatively short, but the idea of being confined on the team bus for the 4-hour drive was almost intolerable. Neil tucked himself between Nikki and Allison to wait it out. Kevin's wavering grip didn't help his composure. They were barely halfway into their trip when he began to pant behind Neil. Neil started to grind his teeth at the sound of it, his heart tripping in his chest. Eventually, Neil stood and tramped down the aisle to where Kevin was hunched over his bent knee, his face buried in the crook of his arm. Andrew, who was leaning over the back of Kevin's seat with a grin, looked up. "Fuck off," Neil said, uninterested in being polite. Andrew laughed, but leaned back on his heels while holding the headrest until he could let go and hit his own seat with a thump. Once he was out of reach, Neil slid into the seat next to Kevin. "Get a grip," he told him in French. "You can't afford to look this weak in front of them." "I can't," he said, in the same language, before giving up. He blinked at Neil instead, eyes gone blank with panic. "Your guard dog won't let anything happen to you," Neil said slowly. "And I won't let them take you back. You said it yourself. You are a fox. Neither of us are ravens anymore. They can't have us." "The master," Kevin attempted, "knows not to overstep his boundaries," Neil finished. Tetsuji had treated Kevin like an expensive pet, one that needed the best of the best. But he had never left a doubt in Kevin's mind that he was Rico's to do with as he pleased. It was willful cruelty. Now, though, Neil had no doubt that Tetsuji knew exactly how hard he could push when he wanted Kevin to last long enough with the foxes to make it to their game against the ravens. "Don't make me watch you struggle," Neil said, because he wasn't cruel enough to say, "They were always worse to me, but I'm not a useless wreck like you right now." There was limited satisfaction in kicking a man who was already down. Neil felt the distinctive thump of a foot hitting the back of their seat, perfectly in line with his lower back. Moments later, skin warm cotton brushed the top of his head as Andrew slung his arm over the back of the seat again and leaned forward. "Have you convinced him that the sky isn't falling yet?" Andrew asked with his shark grin. "You aren't helping," Neil informed him pointlessly. They both knew that Andrew wasn't trying to help. "As long as you stay with him, he'll be fine." "He'll be fine. It'll all be fine," Andrew said, mockery dripping from his voice. "You believe him, don't you, Kevin?"
"I believe him,"
Kevin muttered into his palm, looking at Neil. His expression was hunted. Neil abruptly felt exhausted. There was nothing in him that could make Kevin brave. At this point, Neil was just a vivid reminder of everything Edgar Allan. "You two make a fine pair of liars. The issues with codependency and self-hatred, though, you should tell your shrink about that," Andrew recommended.
"Don't you mean our shrink?" Neil asked, because he wasn't above a cheap shot where he could get one.
Andrew laughed, but that was fine. If Neil wanted to land a proper hit, he would. When he didn't do so, Andrew sat back again, interest lost. As they pulled into Blackwell's parking lot, they had to drive directly past the three black and red buses that brought the Ravens here from West Virginia. Neil's heart sank into his shoes. It wasn't real until he saw them with his own eyes. Neil doubted that Wymack parked as far from them as possible by coincidence. "Everybody off," he said, once he'd taken the key from the ignition. He came up to the back of the bus with Abby's travel bag slung over his shoulder. He stood aside to let Aaron, Nikki, and their dates off before drawing parallel with Kevin and Neil's seat. Wymack produced a bottle of vodka from Abby's bag. "You have 10 seconds. Neil had known Kevin for years, but he was still impressed by the sheer volume of straight spirit the man could consume in such a short amount of time. Once Wymack had pried it out of Kevin's hands, he offered the bottle to Neil.
"No thanks," Neil said.
"Well, if you're offering," Andrew commented, reaching for it. Wymack snatched it away and shoved it back into the bag with a scowl. He stayed standing over the three of them, silent and watchful. That amount of booze didn't take long to start affecting Kevin on an empty stomach. Once his breathing had slowed a little, Neil gave him a shove in the shoulder.
"Move,"
he said. And when Kevin was too slow to react for his liking, "Move, asshole." Neil stood to get out, only to find his way blocked by Andrew as he made to get off the bus himself. He brushed by Neil almost cheek to cheek, his mouth curved into a smirk that was definitely at Neil and Kevin's expense.
"Neil," Wymack said.
Neil paused to look at him, with one foot in the aisle.
"Behave this time. Keep your mouth closed."
"Yes, coach." Unfortunately, he suspected agreeing would be a lot easier than following through. Matt had Neil's change of clothes, which he passed over once Neil had climbed out of the bus. Andrew accepted his own from Nikki before he turned back to watch Kevin drag his feet with Wymack behind him. Allison came to stand next to Neil. They had made plans to come together, or, more accurately, Allison had informed Neil that he would be her date for the evening, and that she would be dressing him. Neil hadn't dared to say no. He was grateful for that now. Allison was a deathly calm presence at his side as she examined her dress for wrinkles. It was obvious that the people staffing the event were fascinated to see them. Neil met more than one curious stare, to which he offered nothing but a bland expression. Rico's number on his face was distinctive enough to be immediately recognizable, especially after he let loose on Kathy Ferdinand's show. By the time they changed out and stored their clothes in their gear closet, Kevin was well and truly under the influence of the vodka. He'd lost his deathly pallor and regained his ability to talk, but Neil doubted that that would last. It wasn't the first time Neil had seen a court repurposed like this. Edgar Allan had hosted banquets during Neil's time there, and they held a glamorous black tie fundraiser each year that was attended by dozens of celebrities and past Raven players. Neil hadn't liked it then, and he still didn't like it now. Wymack opened the court door and waited for them to file through as someone announced their arrival. Every eye in the room turned to them, most of them hostile. The Foxes had won more games since the beginning of this season than they had during any other, and it hadn't endeared them to any of their rival teams. Neil was utterly unsurprised to see that they had been seated at the same table as the Ravens, their orange colors bright against the black. If it wasn't because of Rico's easy influence, then there was doubtless an organizer with a penchant for causing drama. When Andrew noticed, he laughed. "Maybe this will be interesting after all. Kevin, come on." Dan had already seen. She swore under her breath and started walking over with barely a pause, Andrew on her heels. Kevin pasted himself up against the goalkeeper's back, and Neil took his spot behind Kevin like they were walking onto the court for a game. The clack of Allison's heels followed Neil, brisk and businesslike. The sight of all of those familiar faces in their black was mind-bending in a way. The last time Neil had seen most of these people, he had been one of them. More accurately, the last time he had seen most of these people, he had been dragging his bloody and bruised body past them out of Edgar Allan's dorms for the last time. They looked the same now as they had then, cold, removed, and anticipatory. Dan pulled out the chair across from Rico, with Matt on one side and Andrew between her and Kevin. "Rico Moriyama," she greeted, proud as a queen. She looked unimpressed by the Ravens and their perfectly held poses. "I'm Dan Wilds." Rico stretched out his arm towards her, his hand dropped from the wrist like he expected her kiss on his knuckles. As far as shows of disrespect went, this was blatant. But Dan hadn't made it this far in life by backing down. She looked at his outstretched hand for a moment before saying, "Didn't your father ever teach you a proper handshake?" Despite himself, Neil had to bite his lip to stop his mouth falling open. That was a solid hit at Rico's biggest insecurity, one that Rico wouldn't take lying down. Neil had known that Dan had a brutal edge in there somewhere, but this was the first time Neil got the opportunity to see it. Rico let his hand drop back to the table, the corners of his mouth quirking with a smile, but his eyes didn't have a trace of humor in them. "I suppose I shouldn't be surprised by your lack of good manners," Rico said after a moment, his voice frigid under the amusement. "The female class one captain. For someone with such a checkered past, you have done quite well for yourself." "I didn't realize that my past was considered checkered," Dan commented. Her amusement looked genuine and was mixed with just a touch of viciousness. "Didn't you?" Rico asked. "I wouldn't presume to tell you your own history, Hennessy." Matt stiffened visibly, the broad mass of him looming over the table, but Dan just laughed a little. "Smart boy, doing your research. Did you talk to my old teammates? Because trust me when I say that I've heard that one before." She took her seat, and the other Foxes followed her. Neil aimed for the only seat he could possibly take, the one that put him directly across from Jean Moreau. He sat, and for the first time, looked away from Rico. Jean looked exactly the same. Neil was accustomed to being on the receiving end of the coolly composed glare he was given.
To Neil, it was overlaid with the dozens of times John had peeled Neil off of the court floor or put him back together after Rico and the others were done with him. John's mask had always been better than Nathaniel's. "Jean," Neil said in French, his voice low, "it's been too long." "Your new team is a disgrace," Jean replied. "Don't you feel ashamed to have fallen so far?" "I'm pleased to see you too," Neil replied, with a little smirk. "Is it worth it?" Jean insisted. Neil was sure it was meant to sound like an accusation, but there was a trace of honest desperation underneath. Neil heard it purely from years of exposure to the tone. "I made my own choices, and when you get the chance to make yours, I'll be waiting to ask you the same thing," Neil replied, as steady and sure as his own heartbeat. Jean blinked at the honesty. Even in this more private language, they were still in a crowded room, and Neil wasn't the type to talk like that in front of people. As for the people who could understand them, Neil looked up and found Kevin looking at him like he was trying to figure Neil out. "Kevin," John said, drawing Kevin's eyes to him. His sudden smile was lazy, but it didn't match the chilling expression in his eyes. "Hello, John," Kevin replied softly. There was nothing between them that could be erased with words, and both of them knew it. Neil and Jean had survived the aftermath of Kevin's abandonment together, and while Neil didn't need the hatred over that to fuel him anymore, he suspected Jean did. Neil wouldn't begrudge him that. Neither, it seemed, would Kevin. After a moment, Jean turned his gaze back on Neil. "You're not supposed to be playing at being a striker. Your captain is incapable of turning you into a functional team. Your coach selects for sad backstories over actual skill, and your goalkeeper is an embarrassment to the sport." He had obviously been saving those ones up for a while. This wasn't Rico's bladed insult hidden under a paper-thin layer of courtesy. This was Jean Moreau's blunt and honest criticism, which Neil had heard at least once a day for close to 5 years. "Sure," Neil replied easily. "And there's one other thing you have that I don't." "What's that?" Jean asked cautiously, knowing a trap when he heard one out of Neil's mouth. His arm was lying across the table in well-feigned relaxation, and his sleeve had pulled up. Neil reached across and pressed his index finger to the livid lines traced into the inside of Jean's wrist. "This one's new, isn't it?" Neil murmured. "Jean, I said it once already. Don't do anything stupid." Jean moved his arm from under Neil's finger in a way that pushed his cuff down. "You don't know what you're talking about." "Don't try that with me," Neil warned. "You know it isn't true." "Haven't you ever been told it isn't polite to converse in another language when not everyone speaks it?" Allison interrupted, in badly accented but clear French. When the three of them gaped at her, she went on. "What? Money can't buy you everything, but it can buy you holidays to the south of France and trips to all the best fashion houses in Paris." Her addition to their conversation finally drew Rico's attention away from Dan and to the four of them. "Allison Reynolds, is it?" he asked. "I was sorry to hear about your boyfriend. My condolences." The entire table was silent on both sides, all of them waiting for the fallout. Allison stared back at him for a long moment before she let out a peal of laughter. It was a ringing sound over the quiet, as pretty as the woman who made it. Then she leaned forward so she and Rico had a clear view of one another down the table. "Are you sure you want to go there, Moriyama?" she asked, sugar-sweet and utterly unafraid. "Are you really, really sure?" Rico smiled thinly. "I'm sure I don't know what you mean." "Maybe," Allison said, leaning back in her chair again with her jaw tilted like a challenge. "You're awfully cocky for someone with everything to lose. You might want to be careful with people like us." "Is that a threat?" Davidson asked from down the table. "Of course not," Renee interjected sweetly, like she didn't have a hard grip on Allison's thigh under the table. Allison didn't have to say yes aloud when her eyes said it for her anyway. Neil hadn't known what he was dealing with when he told her the truth about Seth, but he had a feeling now that Allison would prove herself a woman on fire before everything else was done. That is, if she hadn't already. "We prefer to save that sort of thing for the court," Renee went on, still smiling. "You are even less of a threat on the court than you are right now," Jean said, fixing Renee with his pale gaze.
When he took her in, something flickered in her expression. It looked like surprise, but Neil knew enough to recognize it as neatly crushed interest. It didn't stop him from continuing. You did not belong in the same class as us. We didn't ask you to come here, Matt said, from next to Dan. You took what belongs to us, and thieves require punishment. Anna, who had taken Neil's place as the Raven's starting backliner, said from her seat next to Jean. You brought this on yourselves. We didn't steal anything. These are human beings we're talking about, Dan said, her gaze piercing. Of course, you might not understand that. That's just the kind of touchy-feely bullshit I would expect to hear from a fox, Anna spat. She was probably just as disgusted as she sounded. She had never cared for being soft. As one of the few women ravens, she couldn't afford to be. And you wonder why you can't succeed on court. Empathy and success aren't mutually exclusive, Renee interjected gently, resting her head in her cupped palm. We've been having an unprecedented season so far. Yes, relying on raven-trained players, Jean said, gesturing at Kevin and Neil. You can't say that they aren't good enough half the time, and then the other half claim them to be better than everyone else, Matt cut in. Yes, we can. Even the lowest-ranking raven is better than any individual player from another team, Jean replied scornfully. I hope you tell that to Layla Dermont's face next time you see her, Matt said, naming the nightmare goalkeeper from the USC Trojans, who every year came closer to shutting the Ravens out. Neil privately thought that if her backliners were more talented, she probably would have achieved that by now. Not to mention the dozen other Class 1 players that you would poach in a second if you could. It does no one any good to deny the truth, Jean retorted. All right, that's enough, Dan said, tilting her head back. This is an official event, and I don't want to spend the entire evening listening to bickering. Don't waste my Saturday night. I suppose you worked through plenty of Saturday nights in high school, so they must seem important now, Anna said gleefully, as she prodded at Dan. Neil didn't understand, but he thought that was pretty weak as far as stings went. Dan evidently agreed. She laughed brightly and said, If you're attacking my work ethic, you must really be out of ammunition. It was only because Neil was facing his captain that he saw Nikki lean back in his chair to reach around Matt and Dan's back towards Andrew. Nikki was looking at Neil. Or not, Neil realized. He was looking past at Rivka, the Raven goalkeeper, who had the seat next to Anna. Did he just put something in Neil's drink? Nikki said in soft German to Andrew. Neil's grasp of the language wasn't great, not like his French and Japanese, but his 3 years in Europe and 3 months of listening to the monsters bicker had given him more than enough to understand that. Andrew looked somewhat entertained by the direction the conversation had taken, particularly the way that Kevin seemed to be shrinking back in his chair. He hadn't been watching Neil, but Nikki obviously had been. Did he? He asked Nikki, but he was looking directly at Neil. Did he? Neil asked in the same language. Nikki and Aaron both stared at him from down the other end of the table. When his question failed to get an answer, he picked the glass of water up that had been poured for him at his table setting and pulled it closer to him. It looked untouched, but he was intimately familiar with the fact that that meant nothing. He wasn't about to take a sip to find out. He had thought that no one was watching him, but when he looked up from the still surface of the water, he met a pair of intent dark eyes. Holding Rico's gaze, Neil upended the glass across the table. Allison and Kevin both recoiled a little, but mostly it sloshed across to splash over Jean and Anna across from him. The spread of it was impressive, saturating the tablecloth. Really? Rico asked, raising an eyebrow. They obviously hadn't expected him to make a production of it. More fool them. Neil righted the glass and threw it so it shot between Rico and Jean and shattered on the court floor straight behind them. The sound of it echoed, drawing what seemed like every set of eyes in the room. Really, Neil replied in English. It must be hard for you, not getting what you want all the time just because everything you've ever been good at is related to a sport no one in your family gives a damn about. You just always forget yourself, Rico. You're the second son, and that is all you will ever be, no matter how many trophies you win. It's really hard to pity you when you're too stupid to realize that. He didn't speak loudly enough for his words to go beyond their table, but that didn't mean every raven wasn't agape. All those faces were used to sharp-tongued Nathaniel Wesninski, but they had never heard him go after Rico like this.
"Neil," Dan said, sounding equally horrified, as if she hadn't already implied the same thing. But she didn't have a chance to go on before Wymack's voice sounded from directly behind Neil's seat.
"What the hell is going on here?" he asked, presumably of Neil. Neil was too busy watching Rico try to restrain himself to look up.
"Difference in opinion," Neil said, with the vicious snarl of a grin he had inherited from his father. "You know how it goes, coach."
Rico's look promised revenge, but Neil's blood was up enough that he had forgotten how to be afraid.
"Get up," Wymack commanded. "Abby's finding us a new table. Now!"
The others all stood up quicker than Neil, who stayed in his seat for a moment longer. He had a point, and he'd made it. He stood just before Wymack clapped a hand down on his shoulder and dragged him out of the chair. Neil ended up between Dan and Andrew at their new table, put there by a stern-faced Wymack with a warning not to smash anything else. Evidently, he didn't think that Kevin and Allison were good enough neighbors.
"To think that we thought you were the quiet type," Dan said, bumping shoulders with him gently.
"Yeah, and I thought the same about you," Neil replied, bumping her back. "What was Anna talking about?" Dan clearly didn't recognize the name, but she knew what he meant.
"I'll tell you later, kiddo. Don't worry about it now."
Neil was prepared to wait, seeing as Dan seemed unbothered. He turned instead to check on Kevin, where he sat on Andrew's other side, and found his face pinched, but as steady as they could reasonably expect, considering. The dinner itself was fine, now that their dining partners were professionals rather than the Ravens. Renee, Nikki, and Dan carried the conversation like nothing had happened, eventually pulling Kevin into their ex-related discussion. No one talked to Neil, which was fine. Now that he had nothing to focus his adrenaline on, it was fizzing in his gut like anxiety. He kept finding himself gripping his keys in his pocket, just to feel the familiar shape of them in his palm. It didn't seem right that they had focused so intensely on the rest of the foxes, when they all knew how easy Kevin was to rattle. Neil didn't know what that meant. Once dinner was done, Cruz appeared to break down the tables and stack the chairs to clear room on the floor for activities. Even Neil, who had a truly unconventional upbringing, found the dance floor and icebreaker games familiar.
"Go be college kids," Wymack commanded them. "I don't care what you do as long as you don't start any more fights," was Ninsky.
"Yes, coach," Neil said dutifully, with the full knowledge that him starting fights was inevitable. Most of the others seemed nearly eager to throw themselves into the crowd. Aaron and Caitlin headed straight for the dance floor, trailed by Nikki and his date, while Dan and Matt headed off in another direction holding hands. Renee shot Neil a quick look and led Allison away for some fresh air, seeing as Allison had thrown herself into drinking as soon as they had gotten away from the Ravens. Neil would have felt bad abandoning his date if it was anyone else, but he remembered the naked challenge in Allison's eyes as she looked at Rico. He knew she had it in her, and the troublemaker in him loved seeing it turned on their mutual object of hatred. Unfortunately, that left Neil and Kevin and Andrew and an unamused Wymack.
"Tick-tock," Wymack said, gesturing to his watch. "Get out of here."
Kevin heaved a deep breath and headed off with Neil and Andrew at his back. There was no shortage of people who wanted to talk to him or gawk at him. This was a national champion and the subject of countless rumors in the last 8 months. It stood to reason that people wanted to feel out the real Kevin Day. What they got was, of course, nothing like the real Kevin Day, seeing as he had his media-friendly face stuck firmly on. They were also deeply curious about Neil, but Neil wasn't interested in giving them anything but a bored look and maybe a handshake. No one bothered attempting to shake Andrew's hand, which was wise. They were familiar enough with the terror that inhabited the Fox Goal. Their curiosity had been killed off. Andrew did eventually run out of patience, retreating to the wall with Renee to watch them at a distance. Kevin watched him go and didn't stop him, but he stayed inches closer to Neil as soon as Andrew stepped away from them. They had been doing the rounds for a truly improbable amount of time for a pair of unsociable people when a voice behind them said, "Kevin Day." Before he even looked, Neil felt his blood hardening in his veins. He knew that voice as well as he knew his own. For 5 years, Tatsuji Moriyama had been his judge, jury, and sometimes executioner when he felt that Rico couldn't do the job the way he liked. Neil had survived to be 14 according to Tetsuji's will.
He hadn't always been grateful for that over the next 5 years. This was different, though. Neil had never faced Tetsuji as the man who had gone to his older brother and made a bargain of his own. He also had Kevin on his team, Andrew's eyes on him, and Allison at his shoulder where she appeared like a bodyguard. That put them on a more even footing than master and glorified pet, even if it wasn't much more. Tetsuji looked the same as he had the last time Neil had seen him, elegantly dressed and ascetic. He held out his hand, and Kevin dropped his left one in it as obediently as a dog. The top of his palm had scarred white and ugly against his dark skin, where the bones had protruded. Tetsuji looked at it pensively and said in Japanese, "This is a nasty mess." "It's healing," Kevin replied softly. "I hope you realize what a fool you're being," Tetsuji said, still holding Kevin's hand like a truly concerned uncle. "The longer you stay away, the worse you make it for yourself. You know you can't hold out forever." Each word was a blow, draining the life out of Kevin. He was so paralyzed that he didn't pull away until several seconds after Tetsuji stopped talking, and then he obviously couldn't find a response anyway. "Kevin, go find Abby," Neil said, in English rather than French. He didn't want Kevin to have to hear Tetsuji say the words, "Come home." Kevin hesitated, looking at Neil and then around himself. It took Neil a second to realize that he wasn't strong enough to leave by himself. "Allison," Neil prompted quietly, and watched as she grabbed Kevin's wrist and nearly dragged him away. "You overstep," Tetsuji warned him in Japanese again, just as low. Neil let a little smile creep onto his face. "I'm not yours anymore." "Don't let that trick you into thinking you aren't punishable. Do you like your new team? The blonde one and your new captain are both charming in their own way. You best be careful what you expose them to." The threat made Neil boil inside, and his smile stretched bigger and sharper. "My father has his flaws, but he always did think it was more effective to just kill people who needed killing, rather than threaten the people around them." "I should have let your father kill you when he killed your mother and had done." Neil tilted his head. "I think you're trying to upset me. I think you're trying to make me angry enough to make a mistake. But I think you can pull the entire world down around my ears, and I'll still find a way to turn it back on you," he said, and then shrugged. "I'm stubborn that way." Tetsuji chuckled. "Nathaniel, Nathaniel, do you really think that you can win all this? Do you think that Kevin can?" "Yes," Neil said, because it was the only answer to give. Tetsuji gestured, and Jean appeared at his side. He had a glass in each hand, one that he passed to his master, and the other he held out to Neil. His gaze screamed warning, but Neil took it anyway. He didn't have any other choice. If he could have poured this one on Tetsuji's feet, he would have. However, he doubted that he would survive that particular experience more than a few days. Tetsuji had once hit him for dripping blood on his shoes, hard enough to shatter bone. It had only been a finger, so Neil had played anyway. Tetsuji raised his glass to Neil. "A toast, then. May the best team win." "They will," Neil said, tapping his against it and swallowing the drink. It was whiskey, dark and hot at the back of his throat, with a tinge of bitter chemicals that left his mouth once he had swallowed. Tetsuji leaned a little closer and took the glass from Neil's unresisting fingers. That was the evidence gone. "I don't need to make you angry to induce you to make a mistake, Nathaniel. You aren't as clever as you think you are." "I never claimed to be clever," Neil said, because he knew he'd lost this particular battle, but he would still have the last word if he could. "Just tenacious. Excuse me." He tried to make his escape look calm and measured, but he doubted that he achieved that. The foxes were scattered, and none of them were close enough to stop him when he exited the court and headed for the warren of locker rooms and offices. It was near enough to the end of the night that security had moved, so he was free to check for empty rooms without anyone stopping him. He didn't have much time. Neil couldn't trust that one of his old teammates wouldn't come for him while he couldn't fight back. He couldn't trust his new teammates because he wasn't entirely sure how, not when it came to this. The only safety he had was in running and hiding. Time was already starting to run together by the time he found an unlocked office and dropped down into a darkened corner of it. His heart was trying to climb out of his chest, so he curled his arms around it like he could restrain it and ducked his head as though he had any hope of waiting this out. He didn't think Tetsuji would kill him like this, in a way that would arouse suspicions. He also knew that Riko had learned carelessness from someone, and it wasn't either Kengo or Ichiro. The two of them didn't know the meaning of the word. He knew that you didn't need to mean to kill someone. Someone touched their fingers to Neil's where he was gripping himself, a touch so light he could have imagined it, as they said his name. Neil hit out instinctively and connected hard enough to make whomever it was grunt. He couldn't really feel his fists, but that sound was unmistakable. "Stop that," the person said, and Neil's vision cleared enough to make out Andrew's face. It was impossible for Neil to get a clear grip on his expression when all he could see were too many blurry hazel eyes. "What did he give you?" "Some kind of date rape drug," Neil slurred, and then laughed at the sick sliding of his own voice and the stupidity of the term date rape used in relation to him. "Always the same. Where's Kevin?" That was bad. Andrew was meant to be with Kevin. If neither of them were with Kevin, then Kevin could be in trouble. They were already in trouble. "Be quiet," Andrew said. He was looking at something bright. His phone? "Kevin is with Abby." He sounded impatient enough that it probably wasn't the first time he had said it, which meant Neil was losing time. That was bad. Neil was out of control. "Please," he heard himself say, the last light thing before a world of black. Chapter 15. Andrew didn't like to think that he had misjudged someone, but he was struggling to keep his grip on Neil. The man had a death wish. Andrew didn't know anyone else who could be so afraid and so antagonistic at the same time. He seemed intent on committing suicide by Moriyama, and he wasn't picky about which one. Both Riko and Tetsuji looked eager to oblige him. Abby swept Kevin off the court to the bus, where he could drink himself stupid in near privacy, which left Andrew at loose ends. The Ravens were holding the older foxes ransom, but they were keeping their feet under them. Andrew had already seen Dan hit someone so hard in the balls that he'd crumpled. This wasn't his problem. Renee had made the upperclassman hers months ago. He stood back instead and watched the Raven coach square off with his ex-backliner. It was 5 feet and change of aspiring shark versus a member of one of the most powerful criminal empires in the country. It might have been admirable if Neil wasn't setting himself up to lose. When Jean appeared at Tetsuji's side with those two glasses, Andrew already knew what was going to happen. The same way he knew Neil wouldn't hesitate to drink whatever it was, despite knowing it was tainted. Andrew had already seen him do it once. Andrew despised predictability. It was boring, and it got people killed. That was how he justified going after Neil. That, and the look on Rico's face when he and Andrew spoke the morning of Kathy Ferdinand's show. Sunday morning hadn't seen the foxes this rattled since Seth's murder. Kevin hadn't bothered to get up, crippled by a potent fear and booze hangover. Even Aaron was unsettled enough to stay close. Abby kept Neil at her place overnight, but Nikki informed them that Allison had escorted him to B as soon as he was up and walking. Andrew wondered if the aftermath was bad enough that Neil needed gluing back together, and whether he'd chosen psychiatry or was still being forced into it. B had asked him only once how things were between him and Neil since Neil's first appointment, but Andrew refused to answer outright. Neil had broken their deal, but his willingness to uphold his end for nothing puzzled Andrew. Anyone else, Andrew would be able to dismiss. Anyone else, Andrew would have either fucked or fucked up and been done with. But Neil was dangerously impossible to ignore. Using up everything in his toolkit this early on had forced him onto the back foot. Somehow, he had gotten used to winning since signing with WiMAC, and he didn't know how to process the return to status quo. While Andrew thought that regret was wasted emotion, by Sunday afternoon he was starting to question that belief. If he had just let the Ravens have Neil, then he wouldn't be feeling gritty-eyed from being kept awake listening to bitching on the ride back after WiMAC heaved Neil's unconscious body onto the bus. Nor would he have to listen to Nikki recount the upperclassmen's initial panic over their missing striker so many times Andrew finally retreated to the roof. Neil probably had a splitting headache, but Andrew was the only one bruised this time. Neil's fist had left a distinct blue splotch on his sternum. just like Renee said, a good hook. The second part, no killer instinct, Andrew wasn't convinced. There was something underneath Neil's cast iron control, something Andrew had caught a glimpse of when Neil had held a knife to his femoral artery. Andrew had an attention span like an excited dog these days, but whatever it was in Neil kept grabbing his eye just as he went to look away. He was on his third cigarette when the door swung open behind him. That was interesting. Andrew had wrecked the lock months ago, but as far as he was aware, the strict dorm rules kept the other inhabitants off the roof. He never came across anyone up here. Of course, it was the current bane of his existence. Andrew gave him an unwelcoming stare before he turned back to the view. Just looking out over the campus was enough for the most part. Andrew saved looking straight down between his hanging feet for the really bad days. "I thought you were afraid of heights," Neil said, voice hot with malice. Andrew didn't bother answering. He stepped up onto the concrete bollard at the edge of the roof, a few meters away from where Andrew sat, toes in line with the drop-off. Staring down, he looked like he was daring himself to fall. The parking lot stretched below them, a dizzying stretch of dark asphalt. Andrew felt his heart revving up without his permission. "Long way down," Neil commented, rocking heels, toes, and his sneakers until they squeaked. "Probably quick, though. Were you hoping to find out?" It sounded more like a threat than anything else. Neil frowned pensively at his sneakers, balancing on his toes so his entire body turned into an elegant falling arrow a scant inch away from an actual fall. "Nah." He stepped back. Andrew's breathing smoothed out as he regained enough of a hold to push it back down. That was normal. These days, Andrew's body did all kinds of things outside of his control. "I really thought I was starting to understand you, but I remember enough from last night that I've had to reevaluate. I'm not sure whether that's because I've been listening to too much of what the others say about you, or whether I need to stop listening to what you say." Andrew's ever-present grin turned into a smirk around his cigarette. "I don't know what you're talking about." "I thought you said you wouldn't protect me anymore," Neil accused. "If this is your version of gratitude, I would stop now." "I don't owe you my gratitude." The word sounded like poison from Neil's mouth. He looked awful, blue carved into the hollows under his eyes, and no trace of blood in his cheeks. "Don't you? Would you have preferred that Rico found you first?" Rico was never going to come looking, and they both knew that now in the light of day. Last night, Neil hadn't been so convinced. "I don't owe you anything," Neil snapped. "I broke our deal and you agreed to it. That means if someone comes for me, you need to let me stand on my own." "Last night you were cowering, not standing." "Last night I was out of my fucking mind. Let's not pretend that there was a whole lot of logic there." "Yes, I've noticed that you aren't usually that fond of the word please." Neil went still at that. "Shut up!" "Oh, so he has a thing about begging. Not surprising." Neil visibly restrained himself before he answered, like he desperately wanted to say something to flay Andrew's skin off. "Please isn't a pretty word for people like us." Andrew's fingers tightened, curling into his palm. It was irritating when Neil said things that were so right. "Are you just here to whine at me?" "God, you were the one giving me shit," Neil murmured, just loud enough for Andrew to make out. He went on in a louder voice. "I know Jean was there. I remember that much. What did he say?"
"Why didn't you ask him?"
Jean played the part of Rico's dog too well, still collared and chained, even after Kevin and Neil had both broke loose. There was no way that Neil would have left Edgar Allan without Jean, if there was even a chance to take Jean with him. Neil was the kind who liked carrying his useless baggage. Jean crept into the room last night like a terrified animal, thinking that he could stand between Neil and Rico, even though it would probably cost him more than he could afford. That pathetic display of near courage had brought him into the room, but he hadn't stayed too long once he'd seen Andrew there, just long enough to say Neil's name and then flinch at the way Neil had said, "Please." Andrew didn't care for Jean Moreau. Neil said, "Because I want to hear your opinion." That was the truth, too. More fool him. I think that Moreau summoned up the dregs of his bravery and thought he would be your white knight. Thankfully for you, he didn't get the opportunity to find out how long the scraps would last before he gave up, Andrew replied. I could be wrong, though. Maybe he just wanted to act out whatever it was that your team did to you all over again. Probably not. He doesn't seem capable of that level of commitment. They aren't my team anymore. Neil sounded like he was gritting his teeth. Whether it was the reference to the Ravens or the disparagement of Moreau, Andrew wasn't sure, but it was satisfying either way. No, but they are so keen to strip you of your control that they're getting sloppy. Rigo was no poster child for restraint, but to see Tetsuji involving himself so publicly was a different matter. Reynolds had been right. For people with a lot to lose, this branch of the Moriyamas were very keen to make their point against people with nothing on the line. They still think if they push hard enough, I'm going to fold. I always did, eventually, Neil said, with a tinge of bitterness. They don't know... He cut himself off brutally, but Andrew needed to hear that thought completed. They don't know what. How much I want to stay, Neil finished. That was the truth, too, as heavy as iron. Andrew could see now it wasn't because of Kevin. All these weeks, and Neil barely reached out to him, stymied by their history to the point he had gravitated towards Reynolds instead. The others were putting money on the fact that Neil and Reynolds would get together, but Andrew knew better. Neil was still a Raven, looking for a partner, afraid of being alone. Do you think that you'll get what you want? I don't know yet, Neil said after a moment. Do you? I don't want anything, Andrew replied. Neil didn't look impressed. Andrew had hoped for more frustration, though. Kevin was much more satisfying in that regard. Kevin told me weeks ago that he has something you want. I was sure it was just Kevin himself, but I changed my mind. And it's not like he has anything to offer except Exe. So if you want that, why won't you try? Is it the drugs? Oh, Neil. I didn't care about Exe even before the drugs. Not everyone can live off of a sport like you. It's pathetic. Do you think lying about not wanting anything is somehow less so? It wasn't a lie. It wasn't. Andrew didn't want anything because he couldn't, and any thoughts where maybe he could were planted by Kevin's endless stubbornness. Except for those times where he could almost imagine wanting to want something, a cold, sweet yearning in his chest that he always stamped out. That wasn't what Neil was saying, anyway. He obviously prescribed to the idea that humanity relied on desires and fulfillment, but Andrew was direct proof that you could still be alive while wanting nothing. Andrew shrugged and blew out another cloud of smoke, uninterested in arguing with another junkie. Truth for a truth, he said, after another inhale and long exhale. Where did you learn German? Neil's mouth quirked. Germany? Austria, too. I didn't think the Ravens let you out for sightseeing tours. Nah, Neil replied. It must be my turn, right? Andrew didn't say anything to dissuade him, so he went on. Why is this team split in two? That sounded like the kind of question where Neil didn't really care about the answer. They did that themselves, Andrew replied. No, they didn't. Nicky, at least, is desperate for something besides socializing with you lot, but he still sticks close. You hate Caitlin more than I've seen you hate anything, so Aaron keeps his distance. You have a stranglehold on them so tight they won't even crack the door open for the others, so you must have something they all want desperately. Interesting observations. Why do you care? Because, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm going to make this team work like a team this year if it kills me. It might. I might. Let's not make that necessary. I don't think you'll be able to take an inch from them, never mind from me. Whatever you could say about Andrew's relationships with Aaron and Nikki and Kevin, they were stable. They couldn't be anything else when they had all shackled themselves together. Not that it did any good to tell that to the man who had chewed his own hand off to get free of his. Why? Andrew asked. Because on October 13th, I'm going to show Rico and Tetsuji that they can't drive me off by threatening me. If they're really interested in putting me on my knees for good, and Kevin, too, then they're going to have to make it happen on the court, ravens against foxes, and I won't make it easy for them. Andrew hummed. Not just a partner, then. Neil wanted a team. I can't decide whether that tenacity is admirable or stupid. Either way, don't expect my cooperation. Neil said, I don't pretend to understand the way you think. If you need to make it that way for it to be justifiable, then fine. That gave Andrew pause. What's that supposed to mean? I mean, don't make it into a fight. Just let me ask you, Neil said. All I want from you is a yes or a no. The illusion of having a choice is no better than being denied it entirely, Andrew pointed out, because Andrew's no meant nothing to a man obsessed. It's not an illusion. It's just that both of us know you don't have a reason to refuse, Neil said. Don't pretend that I'm backing you into a corner when there's clear air behind you. Will you let me ask? You can ask for something from me in return. Maybe you'll just have to owe me. Fine, Neil replied, without pausing to think about it. You don't know what you're signing yourself up for, Andrew informed him. Neil's agreement left him wide open for everything Andrew could dream up. That wasn't much, but Neil didn't know that. Or perhaps he did. He said, It wouldn't be that way. Not for you. You wouldn't ask me for something that you knew I couldn't give you, and I think you realize that I'm not so honorable that I wouldn't refuse to do something horrible just because you asked. Ask me then, Andrew said, a gauntlet thrown into the concrete between them. There were so many ways Neil could have worded it so Andrew could have said no without a thought. Instead, he said, Will you trust me with their loyalty? Neil was asking Andrew to loosen the leash and trust that Neil would bind them tighter together rather than finally break them apart. Either Andrew was getting transparent, or Neil was even more intelligent than he had suspected. Andrew smiled. Yes, but don't think having my consent means that they'll make it easy for you. Nicky would, because he was desperate for a family, and Kevin might consider it for the strength of the team if he could reconcile himself with Neil rather than Nathaniel. Even if they were convincible, though, Aaron would be the rock that Neil would dash his ship on. He had taken Andrew's warning not to get close to people to heart, and he did it with all of the simmering resentment he wanted to show to Andrew but wouldn't. He also hated Neil as much as Andrew did. I've always liked a challenge, Neil said, with the shadow of a smile. When you figure out what kind of question I owe you an answer to, make sure to ask. His smugness was even more irritating than his persistence. Andrew flicked his cigarette over the side and said, Go away. He didn't watch Neil pivot on the roof and leave, too busy lighting another cigarette. The first indrawn breath this time was no relief, so he flicked that smoke too, and then lit another. By the time he felt like he had gotten a proper inhale, he had lit three more. Chapter 16. Neil was content to pretend the Ravens game was all about personal vendettas until he saw the posters pinned up across campus. Someone with a bit of artistic flair had found some game shots of Kevin and Neil, as well as Jean and Rico, and cut them into one picture, and then emblazoned it with game information in orange and black. Neil would have ripped down every one if Dan and Wymack hadn't explicitly forbidden him from doing so. Their season so far had been impressive, enough so that support for the Foxes had exploded. Neil was pleased for the upperclassmen, but he half wished they had stayed in obscurity. There was no way that they weren't going to be destroyed tonight, and a bigger home crowd wasn't going to help them. The excitement had all of the Foxes on edge, but none more so than Neil and Kevin. The media representation of them as two ex-Ravens facing off their former team painted it like more of a fair fight than it was, considering one of them had swapped positions only months ago, and the other was playing with his non-dominant hand. The weight of their expectations was crushing. The idea of facing their old teammates again so soon after the disaster at the banquet only exacerbated that. Neil spent Thursday night on Wymack's couch, leaving their suite to Matt and Dan. Wymack was a heavy sleeper, so the only person Neil's restlessness disturbed was himself. Kevin was dead silent during practice on Friday morning. Neil kept any comments to himself this time, knowing he didn't have the energy today to wrestle with Kevin's demons and his own. When Wymack called them to the stadium, instead of making them go to afternoon classes, two of them sat together in the inner ring and didn't say a word to each other until Matt fetched them for an early dinner.
Dan made Neil do one last run-through of the Raven lineup with her for the others, once they'd eaten. It wouldn't make any difference now, after the weeks they'd spent trying to identify exploitable weaknesses without finding any, but it was marginally better than being left alone with his thoughts. As they walked through the Raven roster, all he could think was how he had lived that way for years. Raven synchronicity, bred from being confined in the nest, was as familiar as his own name. No one except Kevin understood what it took to leave that terrible and familiar hive mind behind. That was what won the Ravens games, even if it cost them their individuality and free will, and Neil still wasn't certain that his deal had been a good trade-off. The fact of the matter was that despite how sure Neil had sounded when he had asked Andrew for permission to make the Foxes functional, he didn't really know how a functional team worked. All he knew was forced proximity, obsession, and punishment over 18-hour days. He just had to hope that his instincts were good. The tens of thousands of people flowing into the stadium over their heads sounded like distant rolling thunder. They changed out and joined Wymack in the foyer, where Kevin immediately knotted his fingers into the net of one of his rackets, like that could ground him. "Can you do this, Kevin?" Abby asked him softly, her eyes searching his face. "This is our game, too," Kevin said, throwing Neil a lightning-quick glance, like he was reassuring himself that Neil was there at his back. Wymack pulled them in, then, for a pregame rundown. In an ideal world, Dan would have been playing as a dealer like she was supposed to. In this one, Wymack couldn't afford to trust that his offensive line wouldn't crumble because of the Ravens, so Dan was still playing as their sub, while Renee subbed for Allison. Neil's unspoken goal for the game was to make that unnecessary. Well, he had told one person, but Betsy didn't really count. She didn't care about Exie, but Neil's appointment this week had been a half hour of him talking through every aspect of this game. Neil was still feeling sore that they had tried to make him take a blood test for proof that he had been roofied, when there was no point. Nothing would stick to the Moriyamas. Neil would likely come out of the situation looking worse. The warning buzzer went off, making him and half of the team jump. Wymack called them into an orderly line with a brisk clap of his hands. "Let's do this," he said. "I spent half a lifetime stocking Abby's fridge this morning, so the sooner we're finished, the sooner we can all get stupidly drunk at her place." That was enough to make most of the Foxes smile. Kevin was the obvious exception, wan and serious. Hopefully Andrew would keep him from getting alcohol poisoning tonight. The noise when they entered the court to warm up could have driven Neil to his knees if he wasn't utterly detached from it. All he could hear was the pounding of his heart in his ears, and all he could see were the lines of the court and its walls as they ran laps inside. The haze of orange and black audience was at the periphery of his awareness. This time Rico managed to offer a handshake that Dan would accept, probably only because the referees were standing over them. Neil knew that Dan was beyond furious about what had happened to him at the banquet, but her smile was almost civil as she crushed Rico's hand. The Ravens won starting serve, and the Foxes took home goal. As the Foxes lined up at the door, Neil concentrated on the court floor, the hyper-focus blotting out the madness above him. He only heard vaguely the tenfold increase when the announcer said Kevin's name. Wymack stopped Neil at the door as they were announcing him. "Do I need to say it?" "Probably," Neil replied, bumping the end of his racket against the floor in a staccato rhythm. "Give me the basics. There's a lot to choose from." "Be careful. We can't afford red cards tonight. And for the love of God, do not antagonize Rico Moriyama," Wymack replied, after rolling his eyes at Neil. "I'll sub you off if you need it. Otherwise, hit them like you know how." Neil offered him a salute with his free hand, before walking onto the court with his racket slung over his shoulder. It was a sign of how successful the advertising for the game was when his entrance was greeted with the same intensity as Kevin's. To everyone who wasn't an orange, Neil was a Raven. He was keen to prove them wrong. Rico took the court like he was on home turf. Rather than go directly to his starting position, he headed straight towards Kevin with his helmet under his arm. The crowd went wild. Kevin pulled his helmet off, disarmed like he always was by Rico. There was no way for Neil to make out what either of them said over the sound of the audience, but he could see the minuscule tightening in Kevin's media face. After a long moment, Rico reached out and clasped Kevin in a one-armed hug. Kevin was just as slow to return it as he had been on Kathy's show, except this time, he had the excuse of having his hands full with his racket and helmet. The fans went berserk,
no matter what color they were wearing. Rico was doing this to throw Kevin off, and it was working. When Rico pulled away and walked off, he left Kevin frozen in his wake. Neil smashed his racket down, not caring if it splintered on the floor. The heavy shaft reverberated satisfyingly in his hands, and the sound of it jerked Kevin back into life. He finally put his helmet back on, waving to the referees to signal his readiness. Behind them, Andrew was tapping a rapid rhythm on the wall, energetic since he was still riding out the tail end of his drugs. Hopefully he could hold on to that for as long as possible, because tonight they needed him. Rivka was the last one on for the Ravens. Kevin was facing off against John, and Anna was Neil's mark. Neil allowed himself one careful look over all of the familiar faces under their helmets before he shut that part down, letting the balance of his racket and the countdown to serve wash everything else away. The starting buzzer brought him back like a jolt to the heart, and he bolted down the court. The Raven dealer threw the ball straight at home court, which Allison caught on the rebound and flicked to Andrew for him to hit away. It flew straight between Kevin and Neil towards the Raven goal, and they both ran for it. Jean caught it first, being the taller one, and the fight for possession turned nasty so fast, even Neil was surprised. He hadn't thought that Kevin would hold back because of Jean, but the strength of Kevin's furious shouldering was impressive. He stole the ball and hurled it into Neil's net right before Jean knocked him over. Neil didn't have to move to take the ball. He and Kevin practiced that pass so many times at night that both of them could have done it with their eyes closed. Before he could move with it, Anna slammed her stick into his hard enough that pain shot through both of his wrists, and then she smashed him flat with a neat hit in the middle of the sternum. Neil landed so hard he rolled, breath rattling out of his lungs. He came up on one knee and was running in a second, but Anna had already thrown the ball down the court to Rico's partner. The ball flashed between them lightning fast, and then Rico was sidestepping Nikki and pulling back to shoot. He had gotten so close to the goal so quickly that the Fox backliners were reeling behind him. Neil expected to see the goal go red, but instead, Andrew was in Rico's face, hammering the ball away. Allison snatched it from the air and then lost it in a tussle with the Ravens dealer. Johnson, the other Raven striker, caught it and fired another hit that Aaron smacked away, only for Rico to leap and grab it. They were too close this time, and Andrew missed the third attempt on goal by an inch. It had been 3 minutes. Neil doubted anyone had scored against Andrew that quickly before. The man himself was standing against the lit goal, utterly motionless as he watched the color fade. Rico, who should have been moving back up towards his starting point, was still close enough to the goal that he could say something to Andrew. Andrew adjusted his racket where he had slung it over his shoulder. He answered, out of Neil's hearing range. After a second, he heard Allison's higher voice over the low roar of the crowd, and Rico turned away after throwing her a glance. "Are you feeling humiliated yet, Nathaniel?" Johnson asked as he took his spot. "You're already proving the master right about the worth of your team." "Don't waste your breath," Neil recommended, though he would have preferred to sweep Johnson's feet out from under him with his racket. Allison served to Andrew again, and this time his hit was almost as accurate as a Raven's. Kevin caught it and fired it directly to Neil before Jean could take him out. Anna knew a lot about Neil, but she had never seen him play as a striker outside of footage of Fox games. Whatever she was expecting from him, it obviously wasn't for him to simply slam her over and run while she was down. Neil was far enough down the court that 10 large strides put him well within shooting range, but he would have appreciated being able to pass to Kevin, if Kevin wasn't still down the court fighting to get clear of Jean. Rivka was the only obstacle left in his path, a behemoth in the goal compared to Andrew or Renee. Neil knew Rivka was fast and powerful, but Neil was both of those things, and angry as well. This was the man who had dared to put something in his drink at an ERC run event in front of a table full of potential witnesses. Neil feigned, light as air, and then threw the ball so hard at the goal that after it lit up, he caught his own rebound. Anna, who had been running up behind him, came to a screeching halt at his heels. "Lucky shot," she hissed into his ear. Neil tipped the ball out of his racket, straight onto the floor at her feet, rather than doing a proper handover to the dealer, just for the petty satisfaction of watching her scramble for it. "It's not luck if you're good," he shot over his shoulder. He and Kevin clacked sticks hard enough to hurt a little. The Ravens spent most of the next 15 minutes in possession, but they couldn't get around to Andrew.
Neil had seen by now why Kevin was so desperate to have Andrew in his goal, but it was impressive to see him deny shot after perfectly aimed shot, even as Nikki and Aaron struggled in front of him. It couldn't last, though. There was no way that Andrew could hold out. It was a relief when Wymack finally sent on Matt to take Nikki's place. He was grinning, delighted to be marking Rico. Neil hoped that Wymack had given him the same warning about not getting red-carded, because he looked to be spoiling for a fight. Matt made an immediate difference, stealing the ball from Rico in a stunning, full-strength collision before sending it Neil's way. Anna was right in his path and waiting, so he feigned like he was going to run, and then threw it to Kevin just as he outstepped Jean. Jean was taller, but months of training one-on-one with Neil meant Kevin was quicker. He bolted for the goal and scored with a sweet shot that Rivka didn't have a hope of catching. Neil, who had run down towards the away goal in case he was needed, was close enough to say, "Looks like you're getting slower." Rivka snarled wordlessly, but didn't come after him. That goal put the Foxes in the lead, and also spelled the end of any remaining sportsmanship from the Ravens. The game went from brutally fast to just plain brutal as the slower Fox players caught the brunt of their marks putting them on the floor. Their lead didn't last long, either. As many goals as Kevin and Neil could score between the two of them, they couldn't keep up with the Ravens strikers. Their defensive line was being overrun, and it was frustrating to watch them struggle so badly. Neil wanted to be back there with Matt. They hadn't played together like that, but Matt was good, and Neil was better, and they could have shut the Ravens out with Andrew at their backs. Neil had known that the Ravens would do their best to make the Foxes look like clumsy amateurs, but it was worse to see it happen in reality. By the time the first half ended, Abby was on the court almost as often as her players, and the score was 5-7. It was respectable, but there was no way that they could maintain it. Neil was playing out of his skin, but he was already hurting all over, and he suspected the others were feeling the same. Second half started as dirty as the first had finished. Neil was fast, and familiar enough with Raven defense to avoid the worst of it, but even he couldn't outstep all of the hits. With a fresh set of backliners marking them, Neil and Kevin's score rate dropped, while the Raven strikers made the most of the tiring Fox defensive line. They were holding their own, though. That had to be enough. Rico came back on for the last quarter of the game, as did Jean. Surprisingly, Jean was his mark now, rather than staying on Kevin. He didn't have time to wonder. He was busy watching the ball pass down the court, into Rico's net, and then into the goal an inch from Andrew's racket. Rico must have said something as he came back up the court. There was no way that Allison would have gone after him like she did otherwise. She threw her racket aside and hit him so hard that he staggered, forgoing a punch and just driving into him with her shoulder so that they both went down. Johnson and Matt joined in a second later, and then the Raven dealer and Aaron piled on. Neil shot Andrew a quick glance and found him still in his goal. Without Dan on the court, no one but the refs would step in to stop the fight rather than escalate it. They weren't getting the doors open quick enough, so Neil ran to wrestle Allison out of the fray. She fought Neil until she realized it was him. She snarled, "Fuck you," at Rico, blood from her split lip on her chin. As soon as she was extracted, Aaron and Matt backed off, and the refs were there waiting. Allison was given a red card for the seemingly unprovoked check, and the three Ravens all walked away without one. Neil had to pull Matt back from making a comment to the refs which would have seen him issued with another yellow. They both knew it wasn't fair, but they couldn't afford to lose him. Neil shoved him back towards his spot, and in the process happened to look up and see Andrew. There was every chance that Andrew would have stayed in goal either way, rather than wade into the fight when most of the Foxes involved weren't his. This time, even if he wanted to, he couldn't have. The way the Ravens were pushing had taken its toll. He'd dropped his racket and was on one knee. He wasn't the only one. Kevin was using the pause and play to catch his breath, too, but Andrew normally didn't need to. Renee was in the doorway ready to step on court as Allison came off it. There was no way it was going to work. Renee wasn't a good enough dealer, and Andrew wasn't going to be able to hold out. Wymack kept her back, his eyes fixed on Neil. Neil looked across the court to the goal once more, and then bolted for the door, overtaking Allison on the way. By the time he made it over, Dan was waiting for him with Wymack and Renee, with a referee hovering behind them. Neil skidded to a stop in front of them. "Send Dan on for Allison and Renee for Andrew," he said. It didn't matter that there were only 20 minutes left to play.
If they didn't have a functional goalkeeper, then they would bleed goals to the Ravens. And while Renee wasn't as good as Andrew, she was the only one of them who could keep her feet right now. They might not win, but at this point Neil would settle for a loss that wasn't completely shameful. That the Foxes had gone this far was admirable. Neil wanted to see them end it like this. "She's not geared up for goal," Dan protested. "I can be," Renee said, though she was still looking at Neil. "I just need a minute to change." They didn't have the time to argue it. If they waited too long, they would be penalized for holding up play. "Go," Wymack said. "Go, go, go." Once she'd left at a jog, he turned to the two of them. "Dan, you're on. Neil, get Andrew off." Neil clashed sticks with Dan, and they set off across the court together. Neil left Dan at the first fourth and kept going to the goal. Andrew had gotten to his feet and had an arm balanced over his racket. It looked casual, but Neil was willing to bet that he was leaning most of his weight on it. "You're off," Neil said to him, as soon as he was close enough. He threw a glance over his shoulder to determine that Renee was on her way onto the court, doing up her helmet. Andrew didn't move an inch. He smiled a little, his face all hard lines drawn by pain. "Am I? I didn't realize that you were in charge now." "Do I have to ask nicely?"
"You could try."
Despite himself, Neil chuckled. "So, do you want to be here or not?" It was just blind determination that was keeping Andrew on the court now, the same thing keeping him on his feet at all. "No," Andrew said, and bumped shoulders hard enough with Neil to make him stumble as he started to walk towards the door. Neil turned and trailed him up the court before peeling away to take a spot. He was facing off with Rico, who had John behind him. "I thought it was just Kevin who had a soft spot for that wretched goalkeeper," Rico murmured once he was in earshot. It was the first thing he'd said to Neil all game. Neil looked up and met his eye, and then John's over his shoulder. "I recognize that caring for your teammates might be a foreign concept to you, Moriyama, but it isn't for all of us," he replied, putting every scrap of scorn into his voice. "Your sentimentality is more curse than blessing. Don't you think you've cost your team enough already?" He didn't just mean the Foxes. His near-invisible head tilt indicated John as well. Neil's skin crawled with anger at that casual threat, the poorly hidden pleasure in Rico's voice. He pushed it down, stretching for cold amusement instead. "Are you so sure that you can't beat us fairly that you feel you have to eliminate us off the court?" Neil asked, letting a hint of a smirk creep over his face. The buzzer to restart went off just as Rico opened his mouth, sending the two of them to opposite sides of the court. The effect on the Foxes of having their captain on the court was unmistakable. They might have been flagging, but Dan was purposeful and energetic enough that even Neil felt a little better just at the sight of her. His mood only improved once play resumed. Dan was fresh enough that her focused support of her backliners made a discernible difference in keeping the Ravens out. Renee, who had played the end of first half as dealer, but otherwise been on the bench, did superbly in her home position. She had to concede points, with the rate of shots on goal being so high, but she made sure they weren't given for free. Neil, too, was fighting harder than he had been all night. He was almost drained dry, and Jean was essentially fresh by comparison. Neil knew Jean's style of play as well as he knew his own, perhaps better, but he had never played against him. The foot of height difference alone meant that Neil barely touched the ball for the next 10 minutes. The clock ticked down. With 3 minutes left of the game, Dan threw the ball down the court so it bounced right in front of Neil's face. He snatched it and ran, looking for Kevin to pass to. He was right there, and muscle memory took over. The ball got to Kevin without a conscious decision on Neil's part. Kevin took it and ran, but he couldn't have gone far. Neil didn't get a chance to see, because he realized at the last second that in his desperation to score again, he had just put himself in the worst position possible. Then all of Jean's 6 feet and 3 inches slammed into his side, grinding him against the wall. Jean stayed there for an instant, his entire body weight leaning against Neil, before he was ripped away. Kevin sent him reeling across the court and went after him. Neil slid down the wall onto his heels, gasping to get his breath back where Jean had driven it out of him. The panic was right there, waiting to freeze his chest and turn his thoughts to shrieking static. Neil hadn't sat through session after session with Betsy to let that happen. He hadn't gotten this far through the game for it to end that way. He might have to apologize to her after this, for all the times he had mentally denigrated the field of psychiatry. They'd spoken about grounding techniques, using his senses to get out of his head. He just barely held on to the sound of the crowd, the court floor hurting his knees, and Dan's voice like anchors. "Neil," she was saying. When he reached out and grabbed the hand she hovered over his shoulder, the look of relief on her face was staggering. He let her pull him to his feet and balanced him until he could keep himself upright. "You're a tough little shit," she informed him, half reassuring and half fiercely proud. "Just a few more minutes, okay? We're going to get a penalty. He was outside 2 seconds." She was right. Jean had waited too long after he'd passed the ball to hit him, a rookie mistake that took him out of the game for the night. He threw a look over his shoulder to Neil, and then to Rico as he walked off the court. It was telling, and made the fact that Neil was still upright even more satisfying. Neil could barely see straight or hold his racket, but he'd played in worse shape, and with much lower stakes than this. He gave himself a few seconds to breathe, and then put the ball down into the bottom corner of the goal. It wasn't enough. The final score of 13-9 was painful to look at. It was the most goals the Foxes had conceded in a long time, and their first loss after a long winning streak. However, it was also an improbably high number of goals that they had wrestled from the Raven defensive line. Neil looked up at the scoreboard as he rested his hands on his knees and tried to catch his breath. He had just played through an entire game as a striker against his old team. It was surreal to be in one piece after that. Of course, Rico couldn't be satisfied leaving Neil that way. The other Foxes had started to move to the center of their half of the court to regroup, but Neil's pause left him a slow gazelle to the circling lions. "Still so fearful, Nathaniel. Just like your mother," Rico said, from a meter away. It was a cheap shot, but effective. Neil would have hit him in the face, heedless of everything and everyone else, if a broad hand hadn't clamped down on his shoulder. "Rico," Kevin said, sounding deathly calm. Rico's attention was instantly diverted. "A long fall from grace and a hard landing for the mighty Kevin Day, don't you think?" he asked, gesturing across the court. "I'm embarrassed on your behalf." "I'm satisfied," Kevin replied. Rico's mouth twisted into something ugly. "Satisfied?" "Yes," Kevin confirmed. "Not with their performance, but there's enough here for me to work with." "You lost." The word sounded terrible off of his tongue, the same way it always had. It was comforting to know that Rico still found the idea of loss so disgusting. "Yes, we knew we would. There's no way for the Foxes to beat an established team like the Ravens," Kevin said, and then, "yet." That was why. Rico was afraid to lose, and his fear made it easy to know how to hurt him the most. "We'll see you in the spring," Kevin continued. Neil was the only one who could feel the rigidity in his fingers that gave away how frightened he really was. "Thank you for the game tonight." He and Neil turned away together to head back towards their teammates, Kevin still gripping at him. "Shit," Kevin hissed through his teeth. Underneath the constrained civility was panic. "You sound like Jeremy Fox," Neil said, half hysterical. "Thank you for the game. Jesus." "Moral high ground," Kevin replied, before they joined the huddle of Foxes. It had to be the most ridiculous thing that had ever come out of his mouth, but it was completely Kevin Day, the one who admired the honorable and fair Trojans, the one who hated the way the Ravens worked, and certainly the one who knew exactly how to needle Rico on the rare occasion that he was courageous enough to try. The Foxes were mute with disappointment and exhaustion as they changed out, but their spirits rose by the time they had eaten and drunk their fill at Abby's. Neil didn't eat much, still a little nauseous after his near miss. While the others were distracted, he crept out onto Abby's porch. It was chilly enough for him to shove his hands in his pockets as he leaned against the balustrade and looked into the pitch dark of the backyard. After a few minutes of silence, Neil was interrupted by a purposeful footstep on wood. Wemack settled against the doorframe, his gaze piercing. Neil wasn't sure what he expected Wemack to say, but it wasn't "quick thinking today." It took him a second to realize that he meant the swaps on the court. He shrugged a little. It was sensible.
It was clever, Wymack emphasized. You get leadership training at Edgar Allan?
Neil smiled despite himself. The Ravens had a monarchy, not a democracy.
No coach.
Wymack acknowledged.
I wondered if you were going to be a good fit for this team, but you keep surprising me.
He looked at him in silent question, but Wymack shook his head rather than go on.
Don't stay out here too long.
Neil didn't. He followed Wymack back in a couple of minutes later, with steadier hands and a quieter mind. The others all glanced to him when he returned, but their mild concern was comforting rather than irritating. This was his team, warm and stubborn and a little tipsy. This was where he wanted to be.